Hey everybody, and welcome back to Hustlin' in Heels podcast. I am your host, Stacy, and guess what? I have a co-host. Take it away, Ange.
Hey guys, this is my initial first official co-hosting of Hustlin' in Heels. I'm super grateful to be here. I can't wait to get to know you guys and hear the things that you want to talk about, and I'm super excited that Stacy's brought me along for the ride. We will be hustling together.
Yes. So, you know, I've been riding solo for a couple of weeks, couple of episodes here, but I have a co-host now. I couldn't be more excited about it, and it's so awesome to be able to share the studio with you, Ange. And listeners, you will remember Angie from Season 2, Episode 1. So we are now on Episode 3. So Angie came with us Episode 1, and she just kind of knocked it out of the park. And I was like, hey, Ange, what are you doing for the next billions of Thursdays?
And she said, I'm hustling.
That's right. So that's what we're doing. So we've already got some grand plans in the works, and we are excited to be able to continue this journey and continue connecting with our tribe of hustlers. So I'm excited. It's fun.
Me too. So excited.
It's going to be awesome. So it's been a week, right?
It's been a week, and like with career, and it's been a week on the personal side. You know how you just have one of those weeks where wine is just really necessary on a Thursday? I think that's kind of where I'm at.
Well, then you're in the right place. So. Yeah. I mean, when you have Halloween on a Wednesday with three children, like wine on a Thursday is nice. But I will say Halloween in my neighborhood was kind of like a Hallmark movie. We live in a great neighborhood, Victorian Farms. I'm not giving my address because then you'll like, no, just kidding. I should give my address. You can come hang out and drink wine with me. But it was a really cool place. Lots of kids. Not lots of cars running around or driving around crazily. So the kids had a great time. They like loaded up their bags on candy. And yeah, so good times, good time this week. Now, we have a guest with us in the studio tonight. It's not just us. So I would like to say a little bit about the lady that we have here with us. We met her at Women Among Women. I know, listeners, you should be familiar with that now because it's like I'm poaching all of the people that attend that event. And there's a reason, because every time I go, every month, somebody else new comes, or I meet somebody else new and I'm like, oh my gosh, like what an incredible story, or what an incredible person. I would love to have them in the studio. So today is no exception. So I would love to introduce to you all Miss Tara Baker.
Hi. I'm so excited to be here.
Welcome. So we all sat next to each other at the last event, had a few glasses of wine, and then really had a great discussion. So today I hope to be, you know, let the listeners in on this continuation of the discussion that we started. And we're going to really focus on the whole idea of goals. So we got a couple of gold diggers in the studio. So we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But we'd love to learn a little bit more about you, Tara. The listeners know about me. They know what field I'm in. They know a little bit about Angie, that she's also in the same kind of marketing field as well. So what about you, Tara? Where do you come to us from?
Well, you mentioned that your town was like a Hallmark movie. Mine literally is. I'm from Three Oaks, Michigan, which is home of Prancer.
Yay, Prancer!
The best Christmas movie of all time.
Really?
I grew up thinking it was something everyone knew, but later in life I learned that it was because we're from the town it was filmed in. So that's where I come from geographically. But I work in the tech world now. So I work for a global technology company in their animal agriculture division. So I work remotely. I did work out of a corporate office for a while, but I'm transitioning back to Michigan, which is where my roots are, and learning how to work from home, but traveling a ton with my job as well.
Isn't that a testament to what advancements have been in the tech world? Because when you think tech, like IT tech stuff, you don't tend to pair that with agriculture and like livestock, right?
No.
Like, I don't know, Ange, where what do you think of when you think of tech?
You know, in the marketing world, we think of tech and we think website, right? Mm-hmm. Automatic website marketing sorts of things. So when Tara and I struck up a conversation at the Women Among Women, and she said she was in agriculture, and tech. And I thought, I know nothing about this. This is amazing. This is why I'm here. Yes. Like, it's such a diverse group. And you had such a great story about it. And it led into some really great conversation. Mm-hmm. So I love to sort of hear how you got into that. What does that, and what does it mean?
Yeah, so I never would have imagined going into technology either. It wasn't something that I was ever really into as a kid. I was never a video gamer or anything like that. We were busy playing outside and working outside on the farm. So that was never a calling for me. It wasn't something I was familiar with or natural at by any means. But it kind of happened by happenstance, I guess. So I come from a dairy and grain farm, and so that's what my familiarity was, and that's what I went to college for. So agribusiness was my major. Coming out of college, I went into the world of pharmaceuticals, working primarily with veterinarians and farmers. But then about a year or so out of college, I had what I thought was kind of a dream job. So I had moved away to Wisconsin, which was a long ways for me. And I was out there. I figured I moved away on the 3 to 5 year plan. And, you know, I'm going to go and establish myself and, you know, win over the world and I'm going to rock it. You know, nobody can challenge this. And I thought I was, you know, on my way to awesome things. And then about a year into it, the company sold their dairy vaccine line. And that was, I was in Wisconsin, which is America's Dairyland. So that meant that those of us that were in positions such as mine, which were very dairy oriented, they didn't need us anymore. So I went through layoffs and I was one that was laid off. And talk about getting completely sat on your ass. That is how I felt. I thought I was a failure. I thought, you know, in my mind, if you are good enough, you will never be laid off. Despite circumstances, despite budget, despite what's happening in the corporate world, if you are good enough, you will never be laid off. So to me, it was a complete failure. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to confide in about it because I didn't want to talk to folks in the industry too much because I thought it would make a negative name for myself. And nobody in my family had ever really worked for anywhere except our farm. So I didn't know how to talk about corporate things with them. So I didn't know where to turn for a mentor or where to turn for how to navigate this. So it was really kind of a tough time for me to figure out, okay, do I go back into pharmaceuticals? Do I keep barking up that tree? Do I redirect? What happens here? So I just kind of applied for several different things. And fortunately, I had made some good connections in my job so far that, you know, mentioned, hey, I think there's an opening here. I think this would be a good opportunity for you. And one thing that I had learned through the process of working for that company out of college, I was a remote employee with that. My boss lived in California. I lived in Wisconsin. And I felt like as a young person just launching my career, I really needed a little bit more structure. I needed more guidance. I needed more resources locally. I felt like if I was going to learn and grow to my best ability, I needed to have more of a community. And so based off of that, I felt like I need to find a job where I'm not remote. And there was a tech company that was agriculture oriented that was about 30 miles up the road. Through this process, I had also just gotten engaged and my husband had moved out there to follow me.
In Wisconsin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I also was
setting
kind
some roots
of,
down already.
Yeah. I was kind of kicking myself in the butt going, well, he followed me out here, so we better make this work. Because I can't make him follow me back to Michigan because we'd been long distance our entire relationship. And it was just, you know.
And he had found a job out there?
Yeah. He was happy as a clam. Yeah. So I'm going, son of a, I got to figure this out. So
those dang husbands.
Yeah, yeah. So I threw an application into this company thinking, I don't know technology. It had like things about engineers in the description and, you know, stuff that was totally out of my wheelhouse. But it had a few things that did jive with me. And that was dairy, that was agriculture, that was farmers, that was, you know, communicating effectively and those sorts of things. So I went in through the interview process and they offered me a job and I took it and said, hubby, I got a job and I'm going to be local. And he was like, great, what are you doing? And I said, Will. We're going to figure that out, aren't we?
I don't know. I'll let you know as soon as I figure that out.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
But part of it, I remember that. So when we started talking about it, I thought, man, you know, tech, you don't hear, even today, I mean, like certainly not a decade ago, but even today, you don't hear about a lot of women in tech, right? And so I was super curious as to how you fell into that. And I remember you telling me that because you grew up on the farm and in the dairy and grain, right? Mm-hmm. Grain and dairy.
Yep.
It was kind of natural because it was something that you helped your mom and dad with, that you were showing them how tech could really help out with their life. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know that maybe when you applied for the position, you weren't exactly sure, but I almost feel like you had a comfort level with it because it sort of came natural to you when you were helping your mom and dad out.
Sure. For me and talking through kind of that interviewing process and how to connect to the job and connect to the company, it was definitely thinking about, I understand the customers they're serving and I understand their day-to-day life. And so that's kind of how I was able to pitch myself is, you guys are developing products, but I can tell you how to connect to them and I can tell you how to sell them and I can make the end user successful. So that's kind of how I was able to work into it from that standpoint. To kind of dumb it down for myself and make it so that I could connect to it, it was, you know, think about how I would teach my parents how to use things around their business. So how to navigate a software, how to download and use an app. I tried to kind of stair-step it down to some of those basics that would make it so I could comfortably navigate that and also connect to, you know, how it's going to be applied. But what I also kind of learned through this process, because I was thinking of all sorts of different avenues, I was thinking of, do I go into banking? Do I move elsewhere? Do mm-hmm. I was thinking of tons of different things. Do I get out of agriculture completely? And through this process, and I'm still discovering it, but I think I learned to step back and focus on my why rather than just what a specific job title is or what a, you know, specific role is that I have within a company. Because through that process, I also, I learned that I had tied my identity to my job. Mm-hmm. And so then when you get laid off of that job, I felt like such a failure because I felt like that was my identity. Now mm-hmm. when people say, hey, who are you? Still working on that answer.
Yeah.
You know, and so that I think is really what devastated me. And so now I'm trying to focus on what is my why. And then, yeah, the job title is just secondary to
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. And we did a whole episode right on reinvention where we kind of talked about figuring out what that why is and figuring out who you are outside of what those titles are. But I want to come back to this whole title idea because you're right. I mean, we do self-identify so much with our career and it's understandable, right? Like you pay money, lots of money, thousands of dollars of money that you're probably still paying off today.
For a lot of years.
for a lot of years to get to that place, to find that accomplishment and to get that piece of paper that will then allow you into the door to get that job and to get that title and get that position. So, of course, it's natural to feel identification with that because it's something you've worked on for so long. And it's probably something that brings you pride. Anytime you have something that brings you pride, it's going to be hard to disconnect from that. So, I like that you talk about how you felt like a failure. Not that I like that you felt like a failure, but I like that you just had the guts to say that because that's got to be such a common theme for women who are out there in the career world who, by no fault of their own, they're probably busting their ass, but something happens and they cut ties with that position and they probably feel that same thing. Was it kind of like a depression in the way where you were feeling like, did I do enough? Is there something I could have done? You know, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, definitely. I think there were two things that were exceptionally hard. Number one was me for myself. I'd always been exceptionally goal-oriented mm-hmm. and kind of a high achiever. So, you know, if I played a sport, I was 4-year varsity, no matter what. If I, you know, took a class, I was getting an A. So I was always, you know, striving to be at the top of my game, regardless of what it was I was in. And I had done very well at that. I hadn't had many things I had gone after and not achieved.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when that happened for me, I was like, I don't know how to navigate this. But then also some of the toughest moments came when, you know, my parents or family or, you know, family holidays or whatever, those questions came up. How's mm-hmm. it going? Yeah. What's going on? Well, you know, I'm a year into this. I'm not happy with it. And now I'm getting layoffs announced mm-hmm. and they're all looking at me as a failure because, like I say, they don't have corporate experience.
Right.
So they're not used to the constant change, constant evolution that corporations go through. they're used to the family farm that's been in the same family mm-hmm. for however many mm-hmm. generations. And, you know, it's a big change if somebody does one little thing, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And it's probably an unfamiliar conversation for you to have as someone who is goal-oriented and a constant high achiever.
Yeah.
Well, and especially when you navigate into the layoffs, right? Because there's not any definitive anything to that. I mean, when somebody asks you what happened, you say, oh, well, I got laid off. Well, what does that mean? There's not really any closure behind that. Right. Did you do something wrong? No. Was there a big blow up and in the moment something happened? No, they just did some things that were out of my control that ended up, you know, they didn't need that position anymore. And so without that closure and that definitive aspect of it, it's really tough to explain to people who don't understand the concept of the corporate world and things like that. Coming from a fellow laid off woman over here, I've gone through it. So cheers to that. I've definitely gone through it. And everything you're saying right now, I'm literally saying, oh my gosh, you're in my head. Like you were saying the things that were in my head 9 months ago or whatever. It's amazing. Well, I wish I had known you then.
Well, yeah. And we have, let's capitalize on this. We have so many listeners out there, and I bet there are more than a handful of them that are currently going through this process.
Sure.
Looking back on it, what advice would you give them?
I mean, I love what you said about focus on the why. And I think that, you know, from a career perspective, there are so many careers that you can use that in, but also in our personal lives too, right? Focus on the why, not the what. And it's so hard to do when you're in the moment, though. You know, when you're in that moment of, what do you mean you don't need my position anymore? Like we just had these year reviews and I was doing amazing and you had all of these great things to say to me. And now I've got a couple of weeks compensation and I need to figure it out. Like, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
And that's really tough, especially when you've got a mortgage and you have children to support or a family, you know, a family to support or all of those things. And I'm not going to lie, like, I'll put it out there. I had a couple of days where I was like, I'm not changing out of my pajama pants. I'm going to sit in this and I'm going to feel it. But I think that was like I allowed myself to feel it, to work through it. And then I got myself up. And you just apply for everything. You refresh your resume and you put things out and you cross your fingers. And I went to get coffee a lot with a girlfriend of mine every couple of days who was actually in the same boat as I was. And it really, really helped. It helped a lot.
Mm. So reaching out to others and also just hustling.
Yeah.
Right? And, I mean, putting your stuff out there.
And getting that affirmation. Mm-hmm. Like I reached out to a friend that I knew would sort of rally around me, my tribe.
Yep.
Right? You know, who would give me some affirmative positivity to say, it's just a moment in your life. And I know it doesn't feel like that, but man, you are dedicated. You are an amazing worker. You're intelligent. You have so much to offer and we'll get through this.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
Yeah.
What do you think, Tara?
That kind of stems off of, I think, what I've learned through this process too. And that is that I need to learn to advocate for myself more and my direction and do that with my family and friends to build the tribe. So through this process, I kind of looked back and realized I've always been a very autonomous person. I've always, you know, if I have a goal, I just kind of tuck it in my pocket and go like gangbusters to achieve it. And then when I do, everybody says, hey, that's awesome. And I'm like, yeah, I've been working for that for 5 years. I just didn't mention it, you know? And so through this process, I realized, you know what? I need to voice some of the things that I'm feeling and learning and some of the ways I'm redirecting what I have my eyes set on so that my family and friends can get behind me on this. Hmm. And connect with it and want to be a part of it because I can't go this alone anymore. You know, a lot of the things I've achieved so far, like I say, I've been able to just kind of sit on, build, and then, oh, boom, look at this. And this wasn't one of them. I needed to get that tribe rallied up from the get-go and use them to help relaunch myself.
Hmm. That's great insight as well. And I like that. And I think that can kind of launch us into this part two of this discussion. You talked a lot about setting goals and accomplishing those goals. So let's open it up a little bit. Why do we set goals and how do we set them? I mean, you talked about the way that you set goals has changed a little bit. You're a little bit more public or vocal about your goals. What about you?
I've actually let go a little bit. I found that sort of in my younger years, I had this vision of what I thought I should be doing based on my own opinion, based on family's opinion, based on society, you know, those sorts of things. And the further I got into it, man, the less happy I was. And I needed to let go of what everybody else was telling me I should be doing. And just sort of allow myself to lean into what I knew my talent was. I had to give myself credit, recognize my talent, recognize what was giving me some joy, and lean into it. And when I did that, I mean, I broke off an engagement. I allowed myself to explore different careers. I taught gymnastics. I was a nanny. I worked at a runaway shelter. I worked at a daycare. I did all kinds of things to sort of, and they fulfilled me like in all different sure. sorts of ways, but to learn about what I really wanted, not what everybody else was telling me mm-hmm. I should be doing, because I really thought I was going to be a teacher with three kids and a white picket fence by the time I was 25. That didn't happen.
No.
And I'm so good with mm-hmm. it. I'm really, really good with it. So from a goals perspective, I think my goal has become really aspirational, and it's become more about allowing, finding and identifying those things that bring me joy and leaning into them.
Yeah.
Instead of listening to the white noise.
Sure. So I guess that's an important thing about setting goals. As you're setting them, what's their significance? Are they important? Are they goals that you should be setting? So it goes back to your finding the why. I mean, if you're going to set a goal, you better figure out if it's a goal that's worth setting and if it's something that's going to support what you're trying to do with your life. So think about some goals that you might have now. Are those aligned with your why? Or are you doing them because people think that you should be doing them? Maybe family members, maybe spouses, maybe friends. Maybe they have set those goals for you, or they've set those expectations for you. So I guess that's an important first step to start. If you're thinking about setting a goal, is it something that you should be doing in the first place? So I don't know. Is that something you've experienced too, Tara?
Oh, absolutely. So many times it seems like goals are set because it's expected. Right? You know, if you're a student in school, it's expected you're a 4.0 student. So you set that goal and you do it. But would a better reality have been to set the goal for a 3.5, but have picked up this tremendous on the side internship that gave you so much experience, mm-hmm. right? So there's so many different points in life where I can look back and say, you know, I feel like I may have set goals because of expectations. One that I had come to fruition recently, and it was, I think partially because I had finally let go, was showing cows has always been a big part of my life. And as a family, we showed cows. It was a business. And, you know, you always put those goals together of, you know, we want to sell this animal, or we want to, you know, market these genetics off of this, or, you know, whatever. And it almost took away a little bit of the fun of it. And so in the past couple of years, I finally kind of put that aside and said, I know that I just love showing cows. I love the camaraderie of the group at the show and, you know, the travel experience of it. And I'm just going to go and enjoy those moments and let everything else be as it may. And, you know, something I had always dreamt of doing from the time I was a little kid was showing in the Supreme Championship of World Dairy Expo. That is like the be all end all. But to sit there and say every year it's going to happen, you're going to drive yourself nuts. Mm-hmm. So this year I finally went to World Dairy just ready to embrace the experience and be a part of the team that was getting cattle ready in the barn. And I was asked to lead a heifer that went into the Supreme Championship. So I achieved that goal, but I didn't go into Expo planning for that. I went in finally being comfortable with just being a part of the team and excited for the experience of that mm-hmm. overall week that is, to me, better than Christmas. And it ended up being one of the best weeks of my life.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, because I think we probably are all pretty similar in the And the idea that probably growing up, we had a lot of goals that we set for ourselves and we almost killed ourselves to reach those goals. And we met those goals, but at what expense, right? Yep. And then there comes a time, I don't know if it has anything to do with age. I don't think it necessarily does, but there comes a turning point. Maybe it was during the layoff. Maybe it was when you realize, all right, I don't want this job. I don't want this engagement. There comes a point in your life where you're like, all right, the goal is costing me too much.
Yes.
You know, and so then at that point, maybe you minimize what the goals are, or you change your perspective on goals. Maybe the goal becomes being content or being happy versus achieving something. So I like that idea because there comes a peace with that, right? And you get to kind of enjoy the moment versus hurdling yourself towards the finish line, which I think women, especially hustlers, we tend to do. I mean, if we set a goal, I'll be goddamn if we're not going to reach that goal, right? Come hell or high water, and I'm going to knock people out of the way to get to it, and I'm going to lose sleep, and I'm going to not give other people in my life as much attention as they should have because I am goal-focused and goal-oriented. And I love how the whole conversation seems to be shifting, I think, in our culture where, like I said, great goal, but at what expense? You know, so I kind of like that we're shifting that. But there are some goals worth having. So
I have a question.
Yeah.
We're sitting here talking about goals and there are like driven women, you know, set goals and we go for it. But I also know a lot of driven women who set goals and in their eyes fail at them, you know, because they set these goals and they think that they have to be the best, that, you know, I am going to lose 20 pounds in 10 days. And I'm exaggerating right now, but, you know.
Wait, I can't do that? I got a wedding coming up, Deange.
You can't. You can't do that.
Hell no.
I would highly discourage that thought process.
Okay, keep going.
I'm just
saying. Crush my goal. Go ahead.
But, you know, I've gotten in the way of myself with goal setting. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked about a couple of episodes ago, I talked about wanting to do the Spartan, right? Mm-hmm. Do you know how many times I've talked myself out of it since then? Mm-hmm. So many. There's no way I can do this. I have no idea what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. We get in our own heads of talking ourselves out of these goals that we initially set. How do we stop doing that? Mm-hmm. I feel like that's pretty common. I actually had a girlfriend, girl, wash your face. I know a lot of people are very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. Rachel Hollis, correct? Mm-hmm. She does this, 90? It's like this last 90 days of the year sort of thing of almost not reinventing yourself, but refreshing yourself and like really motivating and there's a word I'm looking for and I can't think of it, but motivating yourself to dig into the last 90 days of the year and reach these things that you want to do.
Finish strong.
Finish strong. I asked a girlfriend, I was like, hey, would you want to do this with me? And she was like, honestly, I would, but then I wouldn't do it 3 days in and I would feel like a failure. So I'm not going to tell you that I will.
So smart.
But man, like in my head, I was like, oh, girl, I feel you. So, yep, I'm kind of right there with you. So I scroll through the emails now and like I sort of take it into account in like my daily life. But she said what I was thinking and I was so grateful for it because I felt like I needed to devote myself to like to commit to it.
Yeah.
And when she said it out loud to me, I was like, that.
Yeah.
That right there.
Mm-hmm. I get that. I have a yes problem.
Yes.
Oh, I have the worst yes problem in the whole world. Like someone will say, I think we should do this. And I'll be like, yes, that's the greatest idea ever. Let's do it. And then I'll do it, but I will kill myself to do it. You know,
so what happens if you don't do it?
I don't like the feeling of not doing it. Like if I commit to something and I want to do it, I just make it happen. You know, not again, at what expense? There are a lot of expense. So listeners, you know, I talk about a lot of stuff and I do a lot of stuff, but I will be the first to admit there are many areas in my life where I recognize that there are things that I need to work on. And this is one of those. So my girlfriends will laugh because every year they'll be like, okay, what's your New Year's resolution? I'll be like, you guys, this year I am not saying yes to so many things. When people ask me to run a committee, when people ask me to run, a Christmas parade. When people ask me to do all these things, I'm going to say no because I don't have the time to do all those things. And they laugh and laugh and laugh and we drink our wine. And then they're right because 2 weeks later, I'm like, you guys, I just like the best idea. And they're like, you just said you weren't going to. I'm like, I know, but it's such a good idea. And life is so short and it's not my practice life and yada, 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 you know? So that's hard. It's hard for me to say no to ideas that excite me because mm-hmm. I'm kind of an adrenaline junkie when it comes to ideas. But I know that there's a problem with that because by saying yes to all these things, there are other things that I'm missing, right? So Kaylee, listeners, you remember Kaylee from season one. She is really trying to live by the whole idea of saying no to some things so you can say hell yes to others. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I still can't do it, but I love it. So what are some of the things that get in the way of accomplishing your goals that you set?
So, yeah. Stacey, I mm-hmm. fall into the same category mm-hmm. you do. I'm a jumper, a yes.
Yes,
everything
jumper.
Every hustler is fantastic. We can go after so many mm-hmm. things. To the point where my husband says that I have 18,000 web browser pages open my mind all the time. Mm-hmm. Because at any given moment, if we are together, I'm rattling off all these different things that are coming out of nowhere. And he's like, what in the world are you talking about? And so I'm still trying to figure out how to refine that. But one thing that I am learning, and like I talked about earlier, I'm learning to advocate for myself and my plans and try to build a tribe. Through this process, I'm learning how to, yes, I may rattle off a ton of ideas and a ton of kind of sort of goals with my husband, my friends, my family, but I'm learning to circle back around on the ones that really mean something and try to get some guts to them and then build that buy-in.
Sure.
So, for instance, one thing that I rattled off several times was, hey, I'm going to get my master's. And it was like, okay, great. One of Tara's 18,000 things, right? Well, then I started getting it and it was like, okay, she's working on something. All right. So then I finally decided I need to build buy-in so everybody's excited for this process and we can all go through it together because it is a drain on me trying to work through that. So I know it sounds stupid, but I just crafted up a little, you know, like when charities or fundraisers have like the little progress chart that looks kind of like a thermometer.
Yeah, the thermometer.
I crafted one up and stuck it on the fridge that shows how far along I am to completion.
Of course you did.
So amazing.
Because I'm like, I need my household to be excited about this. I must and ask for it. And everybody just kind of knows it's happening, but they don't know where I'm at in it. Does it matter? You know, I mm-hmm. need to build buy-in. So I stuck that sucker right up on the fridge and I said, we're all going to go through this together.
You guys, I'm over here. I'm so envious right now because I literally have the opposite problem. I have a no problem. And that is because I'm afraid of failure. And so if I say no, I will never fail, right? So, you know, we're talking about goals and I was in a rut not very long ago mm-hmm. and I was like, okay, I'm going to step outside of the box and I'm going to get myself out of this rut. And Stacey actually invited me to this Women Among Women group. And I told myself so many times I wasn't going. And I had already told her I was going. Mm-hmm. And I was 10 minutes away from telling you I wasn't going because the girlfriend that was supposed to go with me bailed. And I was like, right there. I actually mm-hmm. asked you. I was like, yeah. Are you sure?
And I was like, yeah, I'll see you there in a little bit. Yeah.
I was so
I'll
convinced.
I'll save you a seat.
I wasn't going. And I pulled the trigger. I said yes. Mm-hmm. Whereas I wanted to say no so bad because I didn't want to fail. Hmm. And I mean, when I say fail, like, how do you fail walking into a group of women? But, you know, I mean, like, if you don't engage or there's all kinds of ways we get into
people
our
you don't
head,
know.
Right?
Sure.
But it's landed me here. Mm-hmm. Like, that one time that I said yes and I got out of my own head and actually made a step, the first step towards the goal that I was trying to set has landed me here. And I am so I haven't been so excited about something and I can't even tell you how long.
That's awesome.
It's been amazing. So I'm envious that you guys have a yes problem because I have a no problem. But I think at the end of the day, it's almost about setting small steps instead of this huge one that feels so hard to reach.
So this is why we're going to make great co-hosts together. Here's why. Because I love the shoot for the moon. Let's go run a Spartan trifecta. Let's do all of these crazy things. And then I'm like, fuck. can figure out how to do these things. And you are like, all right, let's be realistic. Let's set these smaller goals. Let's set these achievable goals. Let's not go crazy, but I'm still going to do it. Like, and right. The listeners are on both sides, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to get that perspective, listeners, from the Stacey and Angie team. And it's... they're both fine. You know, they're both good because it speaks to, you know, just kind of who you are as a person and the approach that you take. There are days where I wish I didn't say yes, you know, and there are probably days where like, gosh, why did I say yes? You know, like there got to be days like that. But, you know, you talk about the idea of failure getting in the way of accomplishing them or getting in the way of that. You know, some other things that get in the way of accomplishing your goals are not having enough time or setting unrealistic goals or things like that, that I think we also need to take into account.
100%. You know? Yeah.
Like, we can't just set a goal and then go crush it. Or can we? I mean, we totally can. But
look at your expectations.
Yeah, look at your expectations.
Yeah, look at it. I think that's expectation is so huge. But also, so, you know, we've been talking about family and, you know, Stacey, you talk about your kids a lot and stuff. Guilt. Mm-hmm. Guilt gets in the way of goals a lot. I know, you know, I have a lot of friends who have kiddos and, you know, I have a husband, you know, Terry, you've got a husband. But sometimes these goals – or like self goals, you have to be a little selfish to make them happen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if that comes at the cost of, you know, some things for your family or some things for your husband or whatever, that, man, there's a lot of guilt that comes with that. And it's real easy to set yourself aside and your goals aside because you don't want to have to feel guilty.
Yep, absolutely. And yeah, when you have little people to think about, big children to think about, husbands, it, you know, you have to take their needs into consideration as well. It's not just about you. And so I think that's true too. What else do you think, Tara? What's something that gets in the way of your goals or accomplishing your goals?
Definitely the fear of failure is mm-hmm. a big one. And that's why I think I always used to keep a lot of them tucked away. And so I would have lots of goals going on, but I just didn't want to tell too many people because I didn't want to make it known if I did not succeed, right? So that's something I'm trying to get over. But you kind of talked, Angie talked a little bit earlier about maybe just focusing on the experience a little bit instead of that be all end all. And that's definitely something that I've kind of shifted gears to as well. And, you know, just trying to break it down instead of saying I'm going to lose 15 pounds by December 1st. Saying, you know what, I'm going to embrace a healthier lifestyle. I'm going to make better eating choices and I'm going to be more active. And if it's not 15 pounds, if it's only 7, great, something happened and I'm going to just be happy with that. You know, I would definitely caution whoever's listening to be cognizant of what areas of the life you be more loosey-goosey versus not. For instance, if I'm going to make a financial goal and say I'm going to tuck $50 away a month, I wouldn't recommend being loosey with that. I would recommend being very structured because good I point. Think that's important. But from just kind of a general life aspect, there's lots of kind of little things I've started breaking down into my everyday life. So one thing is I travel a lot for work. And so I've been trying to just say, hey, how can I make sure that my road life still shines a positive light on me? How can I be more professional when I'm on the road? How can I make sure that my life is easier while I'm doing it? But also, you know, every time I come out looking, you know, fresh and ready to rock it, right? So I've focused on like little life hacks to make that process better and make me happier at the end of the day. So like last week I was in Indianapolis. I checked into the hotel and I had a pair of cowboy boots that had some, I'll be honest, cow shit on them. And I knew I was going into a you know, exhibition hall the next morning. I wanted to look polished and professional. And I'm like, man, I need to get this cleaned up. So I went to the front desk and I said, hey, I forgot my toothbrush. So he gave me two little practice toothbrush thingies. I went back to the hotel room, scrubbed those suckers clean, and I walked in the next morning looking like a rock star.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Shoes, to me, that shoes was like will make you feel. There is nothing better so than a pair of shoes to make a woman feel good. You know what one of my goals is? To kill this fly that's bugging me in the studio.
I've
right
been
now.
Watching him. I've good been Lord. He enjoys you, Stacey.
He loves he really me. Does. I am not that sweet. Get mean. Away. No, I like that. I like those like, you know, just those little smaller achievable goals that are going to not only, you know, support your mission of looking polished, but it's going to make you feel better, you know? So I like that too a lot. It's funny that you say, like, I just love how there's so many connections between hustlers, like so many things that we do that are similar, right? Jumpers, that kind of thing. But the way that we go about it can be different too. So like you talk about tucking that goal away in your pocket and just hustling behind the scenes. Like, I feel like I'm the complete opposite. Like, I put a goal out there. And the reason I do is because when I'm feeling like, man, I can't do this, I'm like, but I already said I was gonna. Like, I already told people that I'm gonna do it. So I gotta do it. Like, there's that accountability that if I don't have that accountability, I'll be like, forget it. I didn't even tell anybody about it, so I'm not gonna do it. You know, like that is part of it for me. So I've already put out there, like, a goal in 2019 is to do this ridiculous Spartan Ultra race, which is like 30 miles. That's stupid, right? Like, that's a stupid goal. But guess what? I already said it. It's already on the microphone. So
see, and I just don't have to happen. I don't set long-term goals. I set them small, except for the Spartan race, because I said it out loud on the podcast, which means I've got to actually do it.
Now you have
it.
To. Yeah, I won't make you get a matching tattoo with me.
I actually
say it.
If you say it, it has to be.
I'm just saying the color on tattoo has really grown on me. Like, listeners, if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, take a listen to the season one episode or the season two first episode.
Yep.
And
it's a good one.
And yeah, it's
got a lot of feedback on that. Got a lot of love for that.
But the majority of the time, unless Stacey's influencing me, I don't make long-term goals. I make short-term goals because they work for me.
Yes, they do.
Right? You know, I mean, it's all about getting to, like, know what works for you. If you set a long-term goal, and man, you've done it a few times and you recognize that instead of making you feel good, it ends up making you feel not so good.
Mm-hmm.
Adjust the way you're setting your goals. It sounds really simple. I get that it's not, you guys. I really do. But, you know, you shouldn't be doing something that makes you feel bad about yourself, especially when it comes to goals. That's not the point of them.
Right,
the
goals should be happy.
Yeah, goals should be happy. They should be helping you fulfill yourself and putting a smile on your face, even when you have to work hard to do it.
Yep.
It's super cliche, but like, it's not about the journey. It's about it's not about the destination. It's about the journey.
Yep. Absolutely. So let's talk about, all right, let's assume that you listeners have set a goal. You have already determined that it's a worthy goal, that it's something worth accomplishing, that it's not going to cost too much, whatever that means to you. How do you accomplish that goal? What are your steps? Okay, so you set it. Goal, that's the first step. Do you write it down? Do you guys write your goals down?
No.
I know. I don't either. I write them in my head. But a lot of smart people I know actually write them down. So I'm going to include that at step two. I don't always do it. I feel like I should, but the idea I like, I guess I set it in my head and I write it down in my head. Sometimes I write it down on Facebook. That counts. I like to include why it's important to me, right? Like, so to attach some kind of significance to it.
Focusing right? on the why.
Yes. Yeah. So set it, write it down with the why.
So to interject, I usually have one step in between.
Okay.
I usually run the goal by a sounding board.
You do? Mm.
Yes, because I'm not going to write it until I have a little bit more. Like, I never have a full plan when I set the goal. I'm like, hey, this sounds great. And then I kind of run it by a sounding board of friends or close people that I think would understand somewhat what I'm talking about. And then it's usually refined or redirected before it.
I like that.
Comes to a written down point or an application or whatever.
So a focus group toward. In a sense.
Kind of.
Kind of focus group it out and then redefine. I like that. Redefine or redirect.
Yeah, because I know I personally need to vet things a lot before they're going to go to.
Oh, man. I just walk up to the cliff and jump. I should do more of that. I should definitely do more of that.
It's because I have 18,000 web browsers open all the time.
Me too.
So I need to X a few out.
Do you do that, Ange? Do you run it by people or do you just say, this is a goal, I'm going to do it?
I run it by, here's where I gauge my goals. If I get really excited about it, if I can't, something will go through my head and I'll be like, man, that's a great idea. I really want to do that. If in a week it's still in my head, then I'll start to vocalize it to make it come a little bit alive and make it feel a little real. And only to a few select people that I know will, A, give me honest feedback, and B, won't look at me and say, man, you failed because you did this. They support me regardless of what happens with it. What they will do is if in 6 months I haven't really done a whole lot with it, they'll be like, hey, did anything ever happen with that?
Accountability.
To kind of accountability, but to kind of almost remind me, hey, you were really excited about this. You know, is that something that you would still be really excited about? And I've really appreciated that because sometimes that triggers things. You know, it's easy to forget. It's real easy to forget about things that you set goals about or that excite you in the day-to-day minutiae.
In life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Life absolutely. Gets in the way sometimes.
So I really appreciated that they're like, hey, by the way.
That's a good idea. I like that idea. I like the whole sounding board idea. Okay, so that's fine. I'm going to change my numbers a little bit. So number one was set it. Number two was the sounding board. Number three was the write it down, if that's something you think's important. And then number four, then now you got to make a plan, right? Like you've said it, you have vocalized it. Now you got to make a plan because unless you make that plan, you're probably not going to reach those steps to make that goal, right? Because there's for any goal, there's usually little mini goals along the way to make that. So do you guys do that? Do you set a plan? You break it into steps? You figure out what you're going to do to reach it?
I fail miserably at planning, guys. I really do.
I love this discussion. We all have goals. We all achieve them differently.
Planning sets me up to fail already. In my head, if I make a plan, I've already failed
it. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you get there?
Man, I don't know.
It's all kind of a blur. I don't know. I set the goal. I achieved it. I don't know what the hell happened in between.
I think that what it has started to come down to is pushing myself in the moment.
That was my wine glass.
How's your wine going over there?
That was my wine glass against the microphone as I was trying to set it down quietly. It's Chamberson. It's Cody Cresta Vineyard and Winery from Mattawan, Michigan, 2012 Chamberson, because I forgot to say what wine we were drinking at the very beginning. But it's pretty good. You know why I bought this bottle of wine? Because it's called Chamberson, and I love saying that name.
I'm so impressed you know that word.
I tried to lead you into it, and you thought I was just being a wino.
See?
So.
See? Yeah, it's really good, you guys. Like, I discovered Chamberson. I know, squirrel moment. Just deal with it.
Roll with it.
I discovered this. I've always known the name, and I thought, oh, that sounds like a fancy wine. And then I went to St. Julian's in Pawpaw, and they had a Chamberson, and I was like, yes, I will try that. And it was pretty good. So then when I was getting ready for the episode today, I really like this bottle, and we've never had Cody Cresta wine here. So if you are looking for a wine recommendation for this weekend, highly recommend the Cody Cresta Vineyard and Winery 2012 Chamberson. You can actually get it at Harding's. So that's where I got it. And it won the Finger Lakes International Wine Competition Gold Award. So you know it's good. It has like a little sticker on it. That's why I bought it, because I'm a sucker for stickers that say that they won an award. So that's why I bought it. Also, it's called Chamberson. And then Angie brought, what'd you bring?
In true co-host fashion, I brought something completely opposite of Stacey. Because as much as she enjoys her drier wines, I enjoy my sweet wines. And I am quite the sucker for anything fruit. So I grabbed a Round Barn cherry wine, which actually is a little bit more tart than it is sweet. And I really, really appreciate
that. Oh, you do?
About it? I do. So yeah, that I picked it up because it was cherry. Round Barn's in Baroda. I go there probably a little too often, but they're absolutely
Who doesn't love
fantastic.
Round Barn? Jamming in the vineyard, man.
Cheers. Absolutely.
Cheers to Round Barn.
I mean, they have great events, live music, and some wine, and you can't really beat that. But
it's like the best place to hang out in the summer.
Then you throw cherries into my wine, and I am a happy, happy girl.
Yes. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. All right. We're back. For that sponsor, that little sponsor spot of all these wineries.
We're back to talking about how I fail at planning.
Squirrel. All right. So we have made a plan. All right. So now that you've made a plan.
Some of us
have made a plan. Step five, action. Great to make a plan. Great to write it all out. Great to get your little planner out with your highlighters and your... Now y'all got to do the work. You got to put the work in to accomplish it. So a little bit each day. Thoughts on that?
I'm still back on plan.
Please.
Sorry, yes. Sorry, please, class. I'm the slow kid in the corner. No, so as you were talking through that, I was kind of trying to reflect because I was going, am I an actual planner or am I a jumper? Because I feel like I'm kind of a combination of the two.
Okay.
And I think that comes from two things. Number one, by instinct, I'm a jumper.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be awesome. We're going to rock it. And it doesn't matter how we get there. We're just all going to get there, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. That's how I naturally am. But I was kind of, I guess, called to reality on my first internship when I had went into a couple of meetings without a full plan for those mm-hmm. meetings because I thought, hey, we'll just wing it. We'll get through. Life's going to mm-hmm. be great. Well, I was working for a Fortune 500 company, and apparently that's not how they rolled.
Yeah, you can't just wing it.
Nope. Mm-mm. And as lucky old student me, I thought we could just roll through this. So by the end of the internship, I had a really good kind of call to Jesus time with mm-hmm. one of the directors who said, hey, you know, some things went really awesome this summer, but some feedback I got was that you weren't well prepared for meetings. And part of it was I wasn't used to being well prepared, sure. but part of it also was I didn't know how to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said mm-hmm. some words that have stuck with me and have really changed how I've approached things. And that is, failing to plan is planning to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I am oftentimes referred to as somebody that like overanalyzes and overwrites every detail sure. out because I'm so fearful of going back to that point.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when it comes to personal things of, hey, I'm going to lose 10 pounds. No, I'm not going to write out a grid for what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm on, say, a committee and we say, hey, we're going to put this new program together or we're going to whatever, I'm making spreadsheets. I'm yeah, making, for you sure. know, getting oh. everybody and anybody that could be involved on an email chain immediately and starting to put those steps in place.
See, we're more alike than I actually thought, because as you were talking, I started thinking about it. I'm actually a planner in my career.
Mm-hmm.
So I am very much a planner. Like, I like to know what is due when so that I can map out, because I usually know about how much time each thing is going to take me. So I know I'm meeting deadlines before they're due. Because I don't like day mm-hmm. of. I'm definitely a early deliverer.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if perhaps because I'm such a planner in my career, it's part of the reason I'm not much of a planner in my personal life.
You're all planned out.
I don't like when people, including myself, tell me I need to do things that when I'm not getting paid. When I'm not getting paid for it.
I don't
it.
Like when I tell myself I got to do that. I'm not going to listen to myself about that.
I mean, seriously, including, for example, book club, right?
Uh-huh.
So I had a book club with great girlfriends. Yeah. We had this book club. And it sort of fizzled out because, like, we kind of all got tired of feeling like we needed to read this book by a certain date. But there's a winery, a local
so
winery.
Much
it's so much pressure, right?
It is.
But this local winery has started a book club in South Bend.
Yes, we're going to that.
Are you?
I gotta read the book though.
You're coming?
Yes.
I'm so excited yeah. right now. Okay. Yeah. It's a great book,
yeah,
by the way.
I gotta read it.
Where the Crawdads Sing. Yeah. You guys should pick it up.
Yeah. I RSVP'd yes to Facebook, so I feel like it's official.
I expect you now.
It's soon, right?
Yeah, Tuesday.
I gotta read that book this weekend.
Does it have an audio version?
I'm a fast reader. It's fine.
Squirrel, you guys. We are so many squirrels today. I'm so sorry. But the book club, when somebody else is setting it up, and I'm like, oh, I've got plenty of time mm-hmm. to do that. I don't have to pick the book. Nobody I know picked the books, which means if I don't like it, it's totally okay.
Mm-hmm.
It totally changed the dynamic. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I feel like I plan in my career and outside of it, I just don't like anybody else to be telling me what I need to be doing by when.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of organically happens.
Yep.
Except that I get in my way yeah. with that, because when it doesn't organically happen,
you're like, shit, why didn't
then
that
I just
happen?
Don't do it.
Right.
And
well,
then,
that's okay. Not every goal can be met. I mean, let's just chalk it up to that.
Isn't that a cop out?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not okay with that either. See, I have so many things that are okay, you guys.
See, but I think that that kind of a lot of people are extreme in one way with their profession mm-hmm. and then kind of pull the opposite
yeah.
at home.
Yeah.
You know, a janitor may have the messiest house in the world.
Yeah.
Right? A planner yeah. may be the most loosey-goosey when it comes to not getting to get back
I
to
love
loose.
That we I say mean, loose.
I mean, I've already talked about being
can we
loose.
Please,
guys.
Can we please include the word loose on every episode in season
Done.
Two? Okay.
Done.
Thank you.
That you said it out loud. It's a goal now.
I'm going to plan that shit out. I'm going to write that in my notes before everyone. But I think you can be a planner and a jumper. I'm both. When I first yeah. see it, hear an idea, I say, yep, let's do it. And then I plan it. You know, like, I think you can do both. So,
but see, I think if I hadn't been a planner, if I mm-hmm. had been a planner in my personal life, I would have never moved to New York City.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes it's okay to not be a planner.
For sure.
And to really just dig into the depths of yourself and say, what do I need right now? Mm-hmm. And go. Because sometimes you need to be scared.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to be scared and jump without a plan and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Because you learn to trust yourself yep. that way.
Sure.
You build a little confidence and you, man, I moved to New York City without knowing a soul and without a job. If I can do that, I'm pretty sure I can yeah. do just about anything.
Yeah. It's about, you know, I think it's about flexibility and being able to roll with yeah. it. And yeah, I mean, planning's overrated. Is that what we're saying? No, I'm kidding.
I feel like that.
That's not what we're saying.
I mean, is it overrated? Because no. I'm going to say those words to you again and again if that's yeah, the case.
No, it's not. I'm a jumper and a planner. Like, I yeah. will jump every day. I will also plan every day. You know, like, I just feel like you can do both or you can do one or the other. And again, it's all about what works for you in order to achieve that goal.
And it's great to surround mm-hmm. yourself with people that are both too.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Stacy is my pusher. Like, she pushes me to jump. And I really, really appreciate that. And I have some girlfriends who are planners. And they're like, hey, you know what's really great is that I respect that they're planners. Mm-hmm. I respect what's going on in their life and that they need to be planners. And so when they're like, hey, I need to plan this out, I'm like, seeing them is really important to me right now. Uh-huh. I'm gonna be a planner right now, right. because I sure. need to be,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Yep.
You know, surrounding yourself with diverse people too, mm-hmm. really, I mean, it really helps.
Yep, absolutely. So once you have decided to do the work, you know, you've maybe made a plan or maybe you haven't. I think that's what we've reached. Yep. Then you do the work. Got to do the work. You know, you can't get to a goal without doing it. When I set a goal to finish the Spartan Trifecta, I had to actually work out, you know, I had to create a Spartan course at my parents' house. I had to do a bunch of push-ups and sit-ups and pull-ups and run
Did you
a
really
bunch
do
of
mess.
Yes.
Wow.
It was amazing. So we set, and it'll happen again, but it can't happen right now because it's hunting season. So listeners, I've spent my morning in a tree stand trying to catch the elusive big buck out on the property. And then I went home and put on some real clothes to come here. But yeah, I mean, that was the part. Like the action, it sounds great to get those medals, to get my trifecta jacket that was purchased for me this year. Thank you to the person that bought that for me. But I had to set that goal and then I had to do the things. Like, I'm not just gonna show up and run 15 miles and 30 obstacles. So we had, like, I got from a friend of mine who's a farmer, they had like a bunch of tires, and so one of the obstacles is a tire flip, so I had to go get this giant tire and I put that out in the field, and my dad mowed all these paths for me through the woods and through the fields, because when you're running a Spartan, you're not running on the road. You're running up and down hills and through water. So we would, and then I got this box jump from a friend of mine. My uncle put up a pull-up bar in the barn. Like, the whole family, which is why I love this whole idea of buying, the whole family got into it. In fact, so much that my kids wanted to run a Spartan and they ran one too.
Ooh.
So it was pretty cool. But yeah, like, you got to do the work. So I would work all day and then I'd go out to my parents and I'd be like, all right, got to do 7 miles tonight, you know? So I would do the mile and then I would do all the obstacles. And because if you don't prepare, again, you know, the failure to prepare, then you're going to be preparing to fail. And so I think that's true with any kind of goal, you know, that whole idea of action. Thoughts?
One thing that I guess I kind of thought of as you were saying that is, how much energy and joy did your family get out of participating in that?
It was really cool.
Did
you
ever stop to realize the impact that they probably had about, yeah, Stacy's coming over tonight and we're all getting ready for the Spartan together, you know? How much did that impact?
It was part of the process, man, and it was awesome. Like, my dad, who's like one of my best friends, you know, he's like my hero, he really got into it. So he would mow the trails for me, right? And then not only would he mow the trails, he would come at the very end. I'll never forget. He was like my coach. So I'd be done like running 6 or 7 miles. I'd been down. I'd like done all these bear crawls and pull-ups. And he'd be like, all right, time to do some Walter Payton Hills. And I'm like, Dad, what are Walter Payton Hills? And he's like, well, you know, Walter Payton, when he was working out, he didn't want to have to think about the workout. He wanted to run these hills because he was training for conditioning. So he put rocks in his pocket. Like if he wanted to do 10 hills, he'd put 10 rocks in his pocket. He'd run up the hill. And once he'd run up the hill, he'd throw that one rock out and he'd run down. By the time all of the rocks were out of his pocket, he was done. So every night when I would go out to train, my dad would be like, all right, time for Walter Payton Hills. And he would like physically hand me rocks that I'd have to put in my pocket. And we would run them together. That's so my dad and I would run the hills together. And, you know, he's really not that old. He's only 20 years older than I am. And, you know, some nights I felt like he was kicking my butt. So he really got into it. My brother got into it. My brother ran a Spartan. My brother's 17. And then all of our kids and my nieces got into it. So they would come out with me and they would run miles with me. So my kids would, I would make them run 2 miles with me every night. And it was just so cool. Like the whole family got into it. And then we had this one weekend where I ran the Beast and then they all ran, the kids one and then the Sprint the next day. And so we spent this whole weekend together. Like the kids were swimming in the hotel and then got up and ran. So you're right. I mean, that kind of made the whole thing a little bit sweeter.
So there had to have been days though where you were like, man, I just don't want to do this. Don't want to do this. How did you push through that? What got you there? Or were there days that, I mean, did you give yourself some grace? Were there days that you didn't, and then you picked yourself up the next day, and you were like, this is going to happen.
For sure. I mean, there were days where I, like, should have done stuff, and I was like, I'm just too tired. But most days, like, because there was a goal sitting out there, and it was a public goal for me, not only had I talked about it on Facebook and told my friends and told my family, and I had signed up and already paid for it, you know, it was out there, and the date was coming. I had a date, right? And that date was coming, and so I knew that if I didn't prepare, it was going to kick my butt. And the thought of failure was way worse. Mm. Like the thought of getting out there and not being prepared to run this thing was like way worse in my mind. So I would pack my stuff in my car, made sure I had all my stuff. That way I didn't have an excuse and I'd go right from work. And that was kind of the thing. So, I mean, that's another part of this is preparing to not allow yourself easy outs and excuses, you know? So
this makes me feel like we all need to recognize when we hear that calling to do a random act or a goal or whatever you want to call it, if we say no, that calling is coming for a reason. Mm-hmm. And for you being called to do the Spartan race, maybe at first you thought this is just a physical activity for me to improve myself. But look at how much that impacted your family. Oh,
yeah, totally a journey.
And there was probably a reason more than a race that you were supposed to do that. It brought your family together.
Yep.
And it was probably a much needed, you know, imperative time that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot came out of that. And it's infectious, right? That energy is infectious. Mm-hmm. So if we and our listeners hear, you know, those little chirps in the background that say, hey, maybe we should go after this, by declining that may not just be you declining that one goal.
Yep.
That it could be you declining something that could be rallying a group of people that much needed.
You're absolutely right.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yep. And actually, one of my favorite parts of this is, you know, a week later or so, I went and I picked my kids up from my grandma's. And my grandma said, I just want you to know this. I was talking with Katala, who's my middle girl. She's 8 and she's like my mini me. Like, we look alike, we act alike, we're both morning people. She said, I want you to know that Katala said to me today that she wanted to go out and run because she wanted to be just like her mommy. You know, like,
oh boy.
That's it. Like, there's no better thing to hear, you know, that your child feels inspired by you and wants to do something that's like something that you're doing. So that's it, man. Like, after I heard that, I'm like, all right, like, this is something we need to continue, because not only is that feeding her sense of empowerment, you know, that she can do these things too, but I want to set a strong example for her, you know. So that was kind of it for me. That was one of my driving forces. So before we wrap up, I just want to hit on one more topic. And that's the whole idea of, like, when you're trying to achieve these goals, you know, there's action, and then you hit the goal, there's that whole idea of celebration. So let's make sure that there is a celebration to these goals, however big or small. Maybe it's you're calling up your girlfriend, you're sharing a bottle of wine, or maybe it's a big goal. Maybe you get the medal, you know? So celebration, do you guys think that's a pretty important part of it?
Absolutely. I think celebrating the big and the small victories is huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, again, I know I'm a little opposite from the two of you, but like when I set, I've got this huge goal, but there, you talked about it, there are mini goals in between. Yeah. Like celebrating those mini goals in between is a part of that too, because it feels good, mm-hmm. right? It feels good to reach that small goal, and it feels even better to reach that big goal.
Yeah.
So celebration for me personally is a huge motivator.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that is exceptionally important because it allows your tribe, your squad, your community, however you want to refer to it, to have that positive moment, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you want them to follow you or to be engaged and involved in whatever you're coming up with in the future, you have to continue to have those positive moments of reinforcement and keeping them wanting to support you, right? So whether it be something small and personal or something large. For instance, I came up with a new event for a committee I was on this year, and it was really outside of the bounds of what the committee had done before. And so they were all kind of going, this seems crazy, you know, but okay, we'll do it. And we did, and we celebrated afterwards. But then I also wanted to make sure that it was something that could be repeatable in the future. So we celebrated, but during that process, we also said, how do we reboot this for next year? How do we tweak the planning for next year? And during that high energy moment mm-hmm. is when the best ideas were birthed.
For sure. Mm.
And so I think that moment of reflection is sometimes when the most clarity is achieved.
Yep. I love that. I love that whole idea of reflecting and kind of having a post-game film, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're mm-hmm. figuring out, all right, how did I do that? What should I do different next time? Or how should I, you know, set this goal up differently? So actually, there's one more thing I wanted to mention. So this, I always kind of think about, Angie, when I think about this, the whole idea of giving yourself a little bit of grace with these goals, right? A little bit of grace and a little bit of space. So if things aren't advancing as quickly as you think they are, as long as you're still on that path, it's probably a good thing.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, I think that's why I was asking mm-hmm. you if there were moments of where you quote unquote slipped, mm-hmm. right? You know, you had a plan and you just didn't follow through.
Yeah, but we're not machines, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But you picked up the next day because you put yourself as a priority.
Yep.
And by doing that, you impacted so many other people. And I think that that's something that we don't recognize often enough is that our goals sometimes aren't just ours. And it mm-hmm. goes back to what you were saying about, you know, there's a reason. Sometimes there's a reason that you have that calling and you don't even know it until after it's happened. You know, somebody reaches out to you and says, you really inspired me to do X, Y, and Z. And it put me through this amazing journey mm-hmm. and it's impacted me in so many ways. And so allowing yourself the grace and space to, I don't even want to say fail, but to perhaps not meet that daily goal or whatever, but mm-hmm. remembering that you can still pick up the next day on that journey
yep.
and continue it and reach what your expectation is
yeah.
and still make it happen.
Yeah.
So I listened to the episode you did with Pauline mm-hmm. Wenzel earlier yep. today, and this kind of makes me think of her running for office. She mm-hmm. probably, when she started running for that, did not think about, realize, or process the impact that would have. But one thing I took away from it was she expanded a voter base. She encouraged people to want to go vote again. You know, she got people reinvigorated about that whole political process. And all she thought, I'm assuming, is, hey, you know, I have a reason and I want to run for this and I want to do better for my community, better for my people. But how many people are impacted by that? How many people are now, you know, back part of the political process because yep. of it, because they're re-engaged through that passion? And all it is that infectious energy that she has for running for that office.
Yeah. So many people that you touch, you don't even realize the impact you're having. And it's that whole Bobby Kennedy idea of like dropping a pebble in the water, you know, and the ripples continue out. Yeah. And I love that idea. And it kind of goes hand in hand with the idea of having patience too, which is something that I struggle with. Oh my gosh. On the daily. And, you know, sometimes you have these goals and you want to achieve them. And then there are sometimes things, external forces that kind of get in your way and cause these road bumps, and it can cause you to be frustrated. But sometimes I know I have to remind myself, specifically in my personal life, that sometimes you just have to be willing to be patient. You know, sometimes there are external things that you don't really have control over. And if that goal is worth it to you, that you have to allow for those speed bumps and you have to allow for things that you don't have control over in order for you to accomplish that ultimate goal. So if the goal is worth it to you, sometimes you got to pump the brakes a little bit, or sometimes you have to let other factors kind of dictate the timeline.
Yeah, so there's always a gray space, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing is black and white ever. I mean, it doesn't matter how much planning you do or preparing you do or how many goals and steps and all of it all set out and laid in front of you. Mm-hmm. The only thing guaranteed is there is a gray space somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's gonna adjust at some point. And that's totally okay. And there's probably a reason for it. And that's okay too.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that's a pretty good place to leave it. So listeners, thank you very much for joining us for another Hustlin' in Heels episode. I will ask, if you haven't left us a review on iTunes, that really helps us jump up in the charts. So we would love a review on iTunes or a rating, 5 stars preferably. Not that I'm asking. I am asking.
I am.
We're a marketing man. Bump those. Boost us, all right? Share us with your friends. We would love for you to share us with your tribe, because just like this conversation we've had, we think that there are many more women and men out there who can benefit from being a part of our tribe and being a part of this conversation. We would love to hear from you. If you have a suggestion for a guest or a show topic, you can email Angie and I at letschat@hihpod.com. You can also check us out on Instagram and Twitter at hihpod, and then follow us on Facebook at Hustlin' Heels. You can find us everywhere. We would love to connect with you, and we are looking forward to another great season here, season 2. And I just want to say thank you very much, Tara, for joining us tonight. Your insight was on point, and we're just really happy you joined us.
Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. This was an awesome experience.
Cool.
Podcasts are up and coming. If you're not on the bandwagon yet, definitely need to get right on and put that 5-star rating out there.
That's right. That's right. Last thoughts, Ange?
I just want to say thanks for welcoming me into your Hustlin' tribe, guys. I am really excited to be here and super excited to get to know you a little bit better and have these really important conversations, you know, as we go on into the week. So
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, we're going to have some adventures. We can't wait to tell you all about them.
Absolutely.
So see you later, hustlers.
Hustlin' and Heels is an NBI Studios production. Your hosts are Stacey Carlin and Kaylee Gaines, and your executive producer is Michael Bussing. All music and artwork for the show was created by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. You can follow along with Stacey and Kaylee on all forms of social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HIHpod. And you can also send the show an email to letschat@hihpod.com. Feel free to write into the ladies if you're hustling in heels, work boots, tennis shoes, socks, slippers, or barefoot. If you've got a question, comment, or to suggest a guest, or even if you'd like to be a part of the show. That's all we have for today, so make sure you tune in next Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. But until then, keep on hustling, ladies.